The Bermuda Triangle, also known as the Devil's Triangle, has long been a subject of fascination and speculation due to its reputation for unexplained disappearances of ships and aircraft. This enigmatic stretch of ocean is roughly bounded by Miami, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico, and it covers an area of about 500,000 square miles. The Triangle is most famous for its alleged ability to make things vanish. For centuries, more than 50 ships and 20 aircraft, along with all their passengers, have disappeared in the large triangular area of the Atlantic Ocean. Reports of disappearances in the Bermuda Triangle can date back to Christopher Columbus, with documented records of missing ships from as early as 1800. Despite this, we still are no closer to any answers about why this particular stretch of open water is the location of many ships and aircraft disappearances. Despite the allure of these mysteries, skeptics argue that the Bermuda Triangle's reputation is largely inflated, pointing out that its reported disappearances are not significantly higher than in any other heavily trafficked area of the world's ocean. Many incidences attributed to the Triangle can be explained by human error, equipment malfunction, or natural phenomenon. Nevertheless, the attraction of the Bermuda Triangle persists, captivating the imagination of people around the world and inspiring countless books, films, and documentaries. While the truth behind its mystery may never be fully unravelled, the legend of the Bermuda Triangle continues to spark curiosity and speculation, reminding us of the enduring enticement of the unknown. Hi everybody, and welcome back to the Dark History Podcast, where we explore the darkest parts of human history. Hope everybody is well. I'm Rob, your host as always. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 5, Into the Abyss, exploring the secrets of the Bermuda Triangle. I don't know about you guys, but in the 90s, seemingly every scary documentary or strange occurrence story had something to do with the Bermuda Triangle. This, of course, could just be me. I was still only a kid in the 90s. But I can remember a lot of stuff being centred around it. And the place has sort of always interested me. So today, we're going to look into some of the stories of the missing ghost ships and disappearing aircraft. So without further ado, please turn off those lights, sit back, and relax next to the fire for more dark history. Where to start? Well, I think we may as well start with one of the earliest and most notable incidents linked to the Bermuda Triangle, the disappearance of Flight 19 in 1945. At 14:10 hours, on the 5th of December 1945, a group of five TBM Avenger torpedo bombers took off from the US Naval Air Station, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for a routine overwater navigational training flight. The flight leader, in charge of the unit, dubbed Flight 19, was the US Navy Lieutenant Charles Carroll Taylor, who had amassed some 2,500 flying hours in addition to the completion of a combat tour in the Pacific Theatre during World War II. Taylor and his crew of 13 airmen, some trainee pilots, were to execute the navigation problem number one, a combination of bombing and navigation that other flights had completed or were scheduled to undertake that day. The weather in the area to be covered by the training flight appeared fairly standard. Save for a few scattered showers, visibility and wind speeds were considered to be normal for a training exercise of this nature. The beginning of the exercise was just that, normal. Taylor and his crew made it easily to Hen and Chicken Shoals, where bombs were dropped, according to plan, sometime around 14:30 hours. at 1500 hours. A recording showed that one of the student pilots in the flight requested and was permitted to drop his plane's last bomb. Flight 19 turned and began to make its way towards the second leg of its exercise, and things took a turn for the strange. A radio message was intercepted from the flight at around 1600 hours, recording a conversation lightly between Taylor and the pilot of one of the other planes. On the recording, one of the student pilots was asked by a crewman for a compass reading, to which the pilot replied, "I don't know where we are. We must have gotten lost on that last turn." On the same recording, Lieutenant Taylor can be heard saying, "Both of my compasses are out, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm over land, but it's broken. I'm sure we're in the Keys, but I don't know how far down, and I don't know how to get to Fort Lauderdale." Soon after, one of the planes in the flight called into the NAS, Fort Lauderdale, to report that they were lost. Operators at the base tried many suggestions, from switching radio frequencies to search and rescue frequencies, to imploring Taylor to turn on his YG or IFF transmitter so that his location can be triangulated. For whatever reason, these attempts were ignored by Taylor and other pilots of Flight 19. In one of these recordings, a member of the flight can be heard exclaiming, "Damn it! If we could just fly west, we would get home. Head west, damn it!" Taylor ordered the flight east. By this time, weather conditions in the area had deteriorated and the sun had set. A handful of land-based radio stations were able to triangulate Flight 19's position as being somewhere north of the Bahamas, and significantly off the coast of Florida. Despite this knowledge, the flight's location was not adequately reported to the Naval Air Traffic Control personnel at the NAS Fort Lauderdale. At 18:20, the last message from Flight 19 was received. In this recording, Taylor was heard saying, "All planes close up tight. We'll have to ditch unless landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, we're all going down together." All 14 airmen involved in Flight 19 were never heard from or seen again. But these 14 men wouldn't be the only men to vanish into thin air on the 5th of December 1945. Knowing that the plane's fuel would have run out at 2000 hours, a search and rescue effort was launched to locate the flight and its crew at around 1800 hours that evening, just before the last message was received. Surface vessels, both military and merchant, were notified of a disappearance, and two consolidated PBM Mariner flying boats were diverted from their original training flight to participate in a square pattern search in an attempt to locate any trace of Flight 19. One of these planes, PBM 5, Bureau number 59225, took off from NAS Banana River in Brevard County, Florida, at 1927 hours, carrying a crew of 13 rescue personnel. The plane called in a routine message a few minutes later, but disappeared off the radar entirely within around 20 minutes of takeoff. That night, a merchant ship off the coast of Fort Lauderdale reported seeing a burst of flames shortly before passing through an oil slick in the same vicinity the missing PBM had dropped off the radar. At daybreak the following day, the Navy launched an even larger rescue effort, now having to search for a total of 6 downed aircraft. The effort lasted for around 5 days, during which 300,000 square miles were combed for any signs of the planes or the men working aboard them. Theories surrounding these disappearances are varied, ranging from alien abduction to secret government experiment. The official accounts of the events of the 5th of December 1945 suggest that Lieutenant Taylor mistook his location, believing he was flying over the Florida Keys and the Gulf of Mexico. Armed with a broken compass, he was unable to determine his true location. Eventually, Taylor and his airmen ran out of fuel, forcing them to down their planes and succumb to the elements. The disappearance of PBM-5 is most often attributed to an explosion, as this particular model of plane was prone to such accidents. Whatever the case may be, not a single trace of them has ever been found. It's not only aircraft that have been lost. Many ships have disappeared in the area also. The first being the USS Pickering in 1800. The Pickering, which is widely regarded as the first recorded disappearance attributed to the Bermuda Triangle mystery, was a topsail schooner in the United States Revenue Cutter Service and then the United States Navy during the Quasi-War with France. She was named for Timothy Pickering, then the Secretary of State. The USRC Pickering was built in Newburyport, Massachusetts in 1798 for the Revenue and Cutter Service. Captain Jonathan Chapman was her first commander. The ship was then taken into the Navy in July at the outbreak of the Quasi-War, and she departed Boston for her first cruise on the 22nd of August 1789. In 1799 and early 1800, she was part of Commodore Barry's squadron in the West Indies. Lieutenant Edward Preble commanded the Pickering from January through to June 1799, when he was promoted to be captain and took command of the frigate Essex. The Pickering was permanently transferred to the Navy on May the 20th and redesignated the USS Pickering. Master Commandant Benjamin Hiller, US Navy, assumed command in June and continued to command the ship for its final years. On her final voyage, the Pickering departed from Boston on the 10th of June 1800. Ordered to join with Commodore Thomas Truxton's squadron on the Galapagos Station in the West Indies, she sailed from Newcastle, Delaware on the 20th of August and was never heard from again. She and the 90-person strong crew on board is presumed to have been lost in a gale in September, but this was never proven. This storm is also thought to have sunk the USS Insurgent, which likewise vanished without a trace. The exact cause of the cutter's disappearance remains a mystery. Two more infamous occasions of ship disappearances are the USS Cyclops and the SS Cotopaxi. The USS Cyclops was one of four Collier cargo ships built by the US Navy in 1910. Originally designed for bulk carrying cargo such as coal, when the ship set off from Brazil in February of 1918, it was carrying a payload that was far more dangerous. Thought to be overloaded with cargo when it set sail for Baltimore, the USS Cyclops was weighed down with over 11,000 tons of manganese ore, despite only being designated to transport 8,100 tons. Less than a month later, the USS Cyclops and the 306 crew members had disappeared without a trace. There has been multiple theories over the centuries since the ship went missing. While some speculate that the unstable payload could have been the cause of the ship's disappearance, others suspect that it was sunk by the Germans, who didn't want the manganese arriving at its destination. Some have commented on the sobriety of the ship's captain, while others have discussed that the ship wasn't in suitable condition to sail, let alone while overloaded. To date, no wreckage has ever been found. The SS Cotopaxi was also a bulk carrying ship. Built during World War I, the Cotopaxi had already had its fair share of near misses by the time it disappeared in December of 1925. from a grinding incident in Brazil to a collision in Havana, the Cotopaxi had considerable bad luck. When it set off on its final voyage on the 29th of November 1925, it was laden with a cargo of coal destined for Havana. Just 2 days later, a distress signal was received from the crew stating that they were taking on water from a tropical storm. It wasn't until 95 years later, in 2020, that the fate of the SS Cotopaxi was revealed, discovered just off the coast of St. Augustine, Florida, which is just outside the general accepted borders of the Bermuda Triangle. The Cotopaxi was identified by marine biologist Michael Burnett after 15 years of intense investigation. Another tale of strange disappearances was the story of the Carol A. Deering, the American five-masted commercial schooner that was launched in 1919. On July the 19th, 1920, the Deering sailed from Puerto Rico and arrived at Newport News to pick up a cargo of coal for delivery to Rio de Janeiro. The ship was captained by William H. Merritt, a hero of World War I, who had been cited for bravery under fire for saving his entire crew when his previous command, the Deering-built five-masted schooner Dorothy B. Barrett, was sunk by the German submarine U-117 off Cape May, New Jersey, in 1918. On August the 26, 1920, the ship had cleared the Virginia Capes. However, Captain Merritt fell seriously ill, and the Deering turned back and landed at Lewis, Delaware. There, Captain Merritt, along with his son, who was his first mate, disembarked from the ship. G.G. Deering Company had to move quickly to find his replacement. They soon found the replacement in retired veteran Captain W.T. Warmel. Along with Warmel, Charles B. McLennan came aboard as his first mate. Right away, there were problems. Apparently, Warmel and McLennan despised each other. Being aboard the ship with such close quarters didn't help the conflict between the two men. While his crew was on shore leave, Warmel met with another captain, an old friend, Captain Goodwin, who was captaining another cargo vessel. While talking, Warmel spoke of his crew with disdain. However, he did believe he could trust his engineer, Herbert Bates, whom Godwin knew well. The Deering finally left Rio on December the 2nd, 1920, with no cargo aboard. Early in January 1921, as the ship made a stop in Barbados, Warmel commented to another captain, Captain Hugh Norton, that McLennan, he's a habitual drinker while ashore. He treats the men brutally, totally uncalled for. Warmel was asked by another captain if he was worried about a mutiny. Warmel didn't think all the men would turn against him. However, both captains agreed it wouldn't take the whole crew to start a rebellion. To make matters worse, McLennan yelled at the captain just before he arrived in Barbados, "I'll kill you before it's over, old man." The conflict continued in Barbados. While getting drunk at the Continental Cafe, McLennan was heard loudly saying, "I'll get the captain before we get to Norfolk. I will." His drunkenness and threats landed him in jail. Thinking that McLennan might have learned his lesson, Warmel bailed him out of jail. Around January the 9th, 1921, they continued their voyage back to the United States. It appears as they made their way back, the log entries on the ship's map were filled with Warmel's handwriting, and then things changed. It seems that the handwriting was different. It had replaced the writing of Warmel. The ship continued its voyage up the coast towards North Carolina, heading towards Cape Lookout Shoals. The Deering was next sighted at the Cape Lookout Lightship off North Carolina on January the 28th, 1921. When the Deering hailed it, the lightship's keeper, Captain Jacobson, reported that a tall, thin man with reddish hair and a foreign accent speaking through a megaphone told him the vessel had lost its anchor in a storm off Cape Fear, and asked that the ship's owner, the G.G. Deering Company, be notified. Jacobson took notes of this, but his radio was out, so he was unable to report it. He also noted that the crew seemed to be milling around on the quarterdeck of the ship, an area where they were usually not allowed. The following afternoon, the crew of another vessel transiting the area spotted the Deering sailing a course that would take it directly into Diamond Shoals. They, however, saw no one on the ship's deck and didn't attempt to hail the schooner, assuming that her crew would spot the Cape Hatteras lighthouse or the Diamond Shoals lightship and change course to avoid wrecking on the shoals. On January the 31st, 1921, the Deering was sighted at dawn by surfman C.P. Brady, who was one of the lookouts on duty at the Ghost Guard station in Cape Hatteras. The vessel was hard aground, with all sails set on the outer edge of the Diamond Shoals. These shoals, that extend offshore from Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, have been notorious as a common site for shipwrecks for centuries and are known as the graveyard of the Atlantic. Rescue ships were unable to approach the vessel owing to the bad weather. The ship was not boarded until February the 4th, after being battered by the surf for several days, and it had become clear that the schooner had been completely abandoned. Her steering equipment was found to be damaged, with the wheel shattered and the barnacle box stoved in. Also, the rudder had been disengaged from its stock. The ship's log and navigation equipment were gone, along with the crew's personal effects, and the ship's two lifeboats. In the vessel's galley, it appeared that certain foodstuff was being prepared for the next day's meal at the time of the abandonment. The Coast Guard cutter, Manning, attempted to salvage the Deering, but found this impossible. The vessel was declared a hazard to navigation, and was destroyed using dynamite on March the 4th, to prevent it becoming a danger to other vessels. The crew were never seen again. The Bermuda Triangle is famous for its shipwrecks and aircraft disappearances, but it isn't just old US naval ships or aircraft that go missing. On the 22nd of December 1967, Miami hotel owner and yachtsman Dan Burak set out on his cabin cruiser Witchcraft with a priest named Patrick Horgan. The ship was taken 1 mile off the Miami coastline so that Burak and Horgan could view the Christmas lights visible from the shore. That night, Burak radioed a distress call to the Coast Guard, informing them that the boat's propeller had struck something underwater and that the vessel would need to be towed back in. The Coast Guard requested that he sent up a flare in roughly 20 minutes so that the boat could see them more easily. The official who received the call reportedly later noted that Burak did not seem too concerned about the Witchcraft, a boat that Burak had fitted with a special flotation device in the hull. When the Coast Guard arrived at the location from which Burak had called, he, Horgan, and the Witchcraft were nowhere to be found. Over the following days, a search was conducted over hundreds of square miles of ocean, but the boat and its passengers were never found. Even more recently, in late July 2015, two 14-year-old boys, Austin Stefanos and Perry Cohen, went on a fishing trip in their 19-foot boat. Despite a 15,000 nautical mile search by the Coast Guard, the boys' boat was only found a year later off the coast of Bermuda, but the boys were never seen again. Again in 2015, October the 1st to be exact, the SS El Faro, with a crew of 33 aboard, sank off the coast of the Bahamas within the Triangle after sailing into Hurricane Joaquin. Search crews identified the vessel 15,000 feet below the surface. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to listen to this dark episode. So, the Bermuda Triangle. As I said at the start, I was fascinated about this topic as a kid, and believed the tales of aliens or sea monsters. But as I've got older, and the cynicism has grown, I've realised that all these stories of strange vanishings, or mysterious occurrences, can be rationally explained. For instance, Christopher Columbus is actually one of the first Europeans to cross through the Bermuda Triangle in 1492, and wouldn't you know it, he almost immediately encountered problems. The Santa Maria and her sister ships got stuck in an abundance of algae, which in Columbus's diary he referred to as weeds. The ships were stuck for 3 days, and the sailors became paranoid and panicked, as they feared of running aground or being tangled in the weeds, ultimately being dragged to the ocean floor. The crew would eventually manage to cut their way out, but they remain convinced that this is a dangerous area, all thanks to a highly unusual seaweed. What Columbus and his men call weeds, scientists eventually named sargassum, from the Spanish word sargazo, meaning seaweed, and the area ultimately became known as the Sargasso Sea. This seaweed, when you get stuck in it, wraps around the rudder so you can't steer. Barnacles begin to grow on the ship, slowing it down. But getting stuck is one small part of the problem. When sargassum groups together and begins to rot, as it decomposes, it produces hydrogen sulfide gas. This gas smells terrible, like rotten eggs, and is toxic if you breathe in. It can also irritate your eyes, your nose, and your throat, but it can also cause some serious psychological issues. If inhaled for an extended period of time, it can even possibly drive you to insanity. As I said in my last episode, sometimes history can be blown way out of proportion. The media, or just general word of mouth, sometimes contribute to this, in a bid to make money, or just generally make the stories more interesting. Then it becomes myth, and then legend, and then the gospel truth. Flight 19, for instance, is more likely human error than aliens beaming planes up. The Cyclops, Pickering, and Cotopaxi probably went down in bad weather, and the Deering probably had a mutiny, with the first mate and the crew murdering the captain and getting the fuck out of Dodge before they were hanged. I don't think that Cthulhu rose out of the ocean and swallowed the ship's hull, or aliens came and took anyone. Let's be honest, if you were an alien and you could transcend space and time, why in God's name would you come to Earth, where we can't even decide if the Earth is round or flat? It would be like sitting and watching an ant all day. Now don't get me wrong, some people do that, and I'm not saying there are no aliens. I'm just saying the chances that all of these incidents in this one part of the world are due to aliens or massive sea monsters are slim to none. Anyway, if you could please drop a review on the show, it really does help the podcast out. The more reviews, the more the algorithm pushes the show out there. If you think friends and family may be interested in the podcast, then share it with them. Links to all socials are below. I know adverts can sometimes be a pain, but if you would like ad-free episodes, a link to the show's Patreon is also below. Not only do you get ad-free content, here is where you can find my other podcast, This Week in History. This is a dive into the week's grisly, gruesome, or just random events throughout history. The Patreon is for people who want to support the channel, but don't feel like you have to. As always, if you've been listening for a while and not subscribed, please do that. In that way, you never miss an episode. So with all that out of the way, thank you again for listening. Join us next time for our next episode as we delve into another event and more dark history.